All right, let's conclude with a little Dvar Torah on the Parsha, if you don't mind. I think I saw something that I found fascinating, and it led to an idea that I think is really important and that I want to share with you, and I want to hear your feedback as well. And that relates to the whole issue, which is a major issue today, really major issue, and it's becoming more and more important, which is what's the best way to evolve as a society, as humanity, literally. You know, in the world of science, there's often a focus on provocative research, national scientific competitiveness, achieving celebrity, being the first one to discover something. But what's the proper way to innovate? And when is it right to say no to new ideas and to innovation? That's really my question. Because, for example, right now we all know, we're talking about it a lot, the whole issue of the field of artificial intelligence. That's been described by some as the fourth industrial revolution. It stands to radically redefine how we work, how we live, our lives, really on a global scale. It could change the world, right? For good and for bad. CRISPR, germline gene editing, right? This also has unprecedented potential to totally revolutionize human life. It has the ability to cure disease, make inheritable changes that will be passed along to all of the cells of all future generations of our offspring, right? It can completely alter humankind. These are some of the most profound issues, really, that humanity has ever faced. We have power, the ability to do so much, and just because we can do something, does that always mean that we should do it? There's a lot of good that these technologies can do, and there's also a lot of risk. So how quickly should we be rushing forward to embrace these new possibilities? That's my question. How quickly do we rush forward? And what guidance does the Torah have for us? And it has a lot of guidance. And just something in particular that I saw in this week's Parsha, Parsha's Korach, that I think is provocative, an interesting idea. I remember when I was in yeshiva in Muncie, I had a Rebbe who I was interested in learning more Hasidus. And I asked him for advice, and he told me to learn the Ma'or V'Shemesh. The Ma'or V'Shemesh was Rev. Kolonimus Kalman Halevi Epstein. He was a Talmud of Rev. Elimelech Lezhinsk. And really, it's one of the foundations of Hasidus. He really is it's the sefer that really describes, you know, if you want to understand, according to Hasidus, you know, what's a tzaddik, what's nevuah, what's a neshama, all these fundamental principles of, you know, Hasidic thought. The Ma'or V'Shemesh is a really, really great sefer. And he has something on this week's Parsha that blew my mind, to be honest. He says as follows, talking about Adas Korach, the 250 people that followed and supported Korach, the Ma'or V'Shemesh writes as follows, Me'esayim v'chamishim ish hayu kulam rosh Sanhedrius. These 250 people who followed Korach, they were great, great people. They were the heads of Sanhedrin. Kedoshe elyonim, extremely lofty, holy people. According to what it says in the commentaries, Haya Nachshon ben Aminadav gam kein besocham. Nachshon ben Aminadav was one of the 250 supporters of Korach. Shai Kadosh El Yon kemeforsam. And he himself was, of course, very, very holy. Now, that's quite a statement. Nachshon ben Aminadav, Nachshon is one of the supporters of Korach. Where does it say that? I saw this in the Ma'or V'Shemesh, but who else says that? I personally couldn't think of anyone else who says that. But he says himself, the Ma'or V'Shemesh says, Ulefi ma de'isa b'meforshim. It says it in the Meforshim. Which Meforshim? Who? So this year I got this new sefer, Otzer Palaos HaTorah. It's an incredible sefer. When I'm holding it in the air for you here, this is just one volume. This volume, which is, you know, 1,000 pages. I mean, this, you could do workouts with this, with the sefer. This is just one volume, the volume of Midbar. It's really a great sefer. Anyways, in this sefer, he asked that question. Who are the Meforshim that the Ma'or V'Shemesh is quoting when he suggests that Nachshon was one of the supporters of Korach, the Adas Korach? So he says as follows. He suggests that maybe it's Rabbeinu Bachya. He quotes as following Rabbeinu Bachya. Rabbeinu Bachya writes on our parsha, "Umechlal chamishim meisaim elu, amongst these 250, hayushnaim esar hanasiim, the 12 nasiim, the 12 princes of the tribes, were amongst those 250. She krivu b'chanukas ha-mizbeach. The 12 that brought in the chanukas ha-mizbeach in Bamidbar, those 12, the leaders of each tribe, were amongst Korach's followers. Where does he get this from? V'chein darshu razal. The rabbis say it. This is actually from Bamidbar Rabba, Midrash Rabba. And they learn it from a Gezeira Shava, Krue, which says the word Krue both times. Where? Ksiv Hacha, in our Parsha, Korach, it says, Nesie Eda Krue Moed. These people, these princes, were Krue Moed. Uksiv Bamidbar Sinai, and in Parsha's Bamidbar, it says, Ele Krue Ha'eda Nesie Matos Avosam. These were the Krue Eda, the leaders of each tribe, and we know that Nachshon ben Aminadav was the Nasi of Shevet Yehuda. And that's how we see, therefore, that Nachshon was one of the 12 princes, and therefore he must have been, according to this school of thought, one of those, of the 250 supporters of Korach, which is really, really a wild suggestion. By the way, I mean, he does bring that some of fortune there argue that it was only 10 of the 12. Nachshon and Shlumiel ben Tzri Shaddai, those two were not amongst them. But clearly the Ma'or V'Shemesh disagrees, right? He says that Nachshon was amongst the 250 supporters of Korach. Which, when you think about it, I mean, what I was thinking was, this is a really wild idea. Because Nachshon, we think of as being a great person, which he was a great person. I mean, even the Ma'or V'Shemesh is saying he was great. But the main thing, if you would poll people, what was Nachshon ben Aminadav known for? He was known for when the Jews were at the Yam Suf, at the Red Sea, after fleeing from Egypt, and they had to cross into the Midbar Sinai. Everyone was afraid to go. They didn't have enough emunah, they didn't have enough faith, they didn't have enough courage, whatever it was, no one was willing to go. And he started to go. And he went ahead and he said, I'm going to be the Nachshon. Right? There's even a phrase today. People say, be a Nachshon. Be someone who's daring, who's willing to take chances, take risks, be a leader. And he goes in and it's not splitting right away. But Nachshon says, you know what? Hashem told us to go, that it's going to be okay. I'm going. I'm doing it. We're going. And Nachshon goes in and he tries it. And even though it's not, the sea's not splitting, he continues to go, and it's up to his neck, but he has emunah. And the sea begins to split. Everyone else says, wow, Nachshon, we thought you were going to die, but you did it. He goes through, and Nachshon, the sea splits, and really, in many ways, people say it's in the schus of Nachshon, because he had the emunah. He walked in. Hashem wanted to see, will we walk in? Will we go? Will we have the trust, the faith? And we did, thanks to Nachshon. So Nachshon was willing to take risks, right? Nachshon was willing to move forward, to try something new. He said, you know what? There's a chance it could work. Hashem told us to do it. I'm going in. I'm going to try it. Nachshon was a risk taker. Is that a good mida? Is that a good character trait? Well, yeah, that's how we got through. That's how we got saved from the Egyptians. That's how we got through the Yam Suf, through the Red Sea. We got to the Sinai. But then, now we're in the Sinai, and we see, wait a second, it's a double-edged coin, double-sided coin, right? On the one hand, that, and I want to argue that maybe it was even that same character trait, that Nachshon was the person willing to take risks and willing to jump in, even when it did not look good, it did not look safe, it looked risky. He said, I'm willing to take a risk. I'm willing to try because Hashem said, do it. Hashem, we know we have to go. What other choice do we have? The Egyptians are chasing us. We got to go. So he did it. That same personality we now see was not risk averse, was willing to accept easily new ideas, new risks, new proposals. And Korach comes forward and challenges Moshe Rabbeinu and has new ideas and is almost starting a revolution. Who's willing to join that revolution? Nachshon. Nachshon, who wasn't afraid to jump in to the Yam Suf, again, wasn't afraid to trust Korach. But was that a good thing? I mean, that was a horrible thing that he trusted Korach. But maybe it was the same personality trait, the same ideology that says, I'm willing to jump in the sea, even when we're not totally sure, but I think it's right. That same personality was willing to trust Korach against Moshe Rabbeinu, against Hashem, but he was willing to jump into new ideas, new proposals, new things, and he wanted to help people. He wanted to make a difference, right? It came from a good place. He was a Kadosh Elyon, right? It comes from a good place from Nachshon, but it led to bad results in that case, in the case of Korach. Good results for all of Kol Yisrael. In the case of the Yam Suf, bad results for all those people who followed Korach with a very similar approach to life, though. And this is exactly what we're struggling with today in our society. You know, one example, I'll just give you an example. Pharmaceutical companies, they're constantly debating with patient advocates and regulatory agencies, right, over this idea of the right to try, right? Some people say, you know what, just because a new drug, a new treatment is not totally proven yet, if there's people who are sick, you know, give it to them. Accelerate their approvals for new drugs in the hope of helping certain individuals who are suffering, you know, from imminently life-threatening conditions, right? Even if there's a low chances of success. So give it a shot. Like, why not try? And on the other hand, there's those who argue, like, wait a second, we need to be cautious. Because if we don't first ensure that we have very robust data collection and that it's not safe and effective, then it won't help most people, because then it will be pushed out of trial. The other trials will be stopped, and we'll lose all these opportunities to help more people. And maybe if we're more cautious and we give it the chance to be proven first, the new interventions, new technologies, new drugs, then it can help more people over the long term. And if our goal is to help as many people as possible, maybe we shouldn't rush. But on the other hand, how can you argue to someone who's dying, who there's a drug who could save their life, but it's not approved yet, and you're going to tell them, like, no, it's going to help more people in the long run? So this is the challenge, and there's an approach in the bioethics literature called the precautionary principle. It's been an approach that's been around for about 40 years now, since they were doing genetic engineering on plants, actually, when it started. And the precautionary principle, the idea is, it argues that when new therapies or technologies, when they can cause unknown harm to the world, or maybe negative consequences to even generations to come, that the burden of proof regarding their safety has to be thoroughly demonstrated by the people who are advocating for the new therapy or the new policy before moving forward with it. You cannot move forward with a new drug, a new idea, until it's proven. It has to first show its efficacy, its safety, right? There's a burden of proof before we move forward. And by the way, when we talk about things like CRISPR, it's especially important because, you know, science has shown us that the human genome is much more complex than we previously thought. And our capabilities might, you know, proceed much faster than our knowledge about the precise outcomes of applying the new technology, right? In many ways, our capabilities have exceeded our wisdom, and we need to give it time for our wisdom to catch up, or we could do horrific harm, right? And you know, there's same too when we talk about AI. If we don't advance wisely, artificial intelligence could become more intelligent than even the most skilled human beings. And if it's not aligned with human goals and values, it could become motivated to do all kinds of negative things. It could literally take control of humanity and do all sorts of, you know, horrible things that we can't even imagine for its own interests that could actually result in an existential threat to humanity. So we have to let our wisdom catch up with our capabilities, right? We can't rush in. We can't just jump into every sea, every river, right? But on the other hand, we want to save lives. But so the approach of the precautionary principle argues that we have to find the proper balance. There's a balance between the two. It's like a yellow light. It's not a red light. It's not a green light to everything, but it's not a red light either. It's saying we want to advance. We want new technology. We want to do good things. We want to save lives. Yes, but not yet. Right? When we're ready. We got to get there, but we also got to be ready for it. Right? And I personally think that actually this is the approach of halacha. This is the Jewish approach. My source for that, there's a lot. But my best sources for that, one, you have in the case of kidney donation, the very first generation in the early 60s, the Minchas Yitzchak and the Tzitz Eliezer, they were not supportive when kidney donation was new. They said it's dangerous, it's risky, and we're not sure how good this is going to be, even for the recipient, so let's be careful. But then by 1981, Rav Avadya Yosef was already encouraging it in his tshuvas, and in more recent years, you see the poskim are very encouraging of kidney donation. They just needed to be convinced first. They said, let's not rush in until we see that it's actually safe, effective, that it's really making the difference that we hoped it would make. Rav Sternbach, I spoke about this many times, but Rav Sternbach in his tshuvas on IVF, he goes a full, he went from saying in his first tshuvas on the matter, In the early 1980s, you know, IVF was invented. It was the first IVF baby. It was 1978. So Rav Sternbach in the early 80s, he said it was Isser Gamor. He said it's totally forbidden. IVF is not allowed by Jewish law. Then he has later tshuvas where he says, you know, it's not ideal. Then he says, lo Usser v'lo Mutter. He says it's not allowed. It's not prohibited. It's not permitted. He goes back and forth. to the extent at which in his more recent tshuvas, he says it's a chiyuv gamor. The same person, the same posik, went from saying that something is totally forbidden, and then within 40 years, he's saying it's completely obligated. So I argue that, well, that's the precautionary principle. What Rav Schirrenbach was doing was simply saying, I'm willing to accept new technology. I'm willing to embrace new interventions that could be very good. But first, I need to be convinced of that. I want to protect people. So let me first see how safe it is, how effective it is. And if it is, I'm willing to embrace it and encourage it. But you have to first convince me. I'm not going to just jump right in. Let me see first how safe it is, how effective it is. What are the unintended consequences, off-target effects? Let me see that, and then, yeah, we could go for it, if so. I was recently in Israel, and I met with Rav Asher Weiss. So I asked him, you know, what do you think of this? And what do you think about the precautionary principle, and what's the right way to advance? And he gave me a fascinating answer, which I loved. He said, you know, some of these approaches that I've mentioned here of the post-scheme, some of them are overly strict, he thought, a little bit more bioconservative, as we would say. That's the phrase we use in medical ethics. A little bit more bioconservative than he's comfortable with. Meaning, he felt that if you could save life, we should be doing everything we can and moving as quickly as possible to save life. But of course, he agrees as well that you have to be cautious, you have to be careful. So his theory was, I thought this was a great analogy. He said, we should progress like an ambulance driver. What does he mean by that? When an ambulance is called to an emergency, it needs to get there as quickly as possible, right? There's someone suffering. There's someone who's not breathing. Their heart's not beating. You know, they need attention as quickly as possible, and a delay could result in the difference between life and death. However, when the ambulance is driving there, they cannot just drive wildly and crazy. They can't just go on the freeway and go on the wrong side of the road or drive over a bridge. I mean, they have to be careful because they need to get there, right? It's one thing if it takes them 2 minutes, but they need to avoid the accident that will make them not be able to get there for a half an hour. You know, they have to drive as quickly as they can, but within reason, with caution. So Rav Asher Weiss, Shlita, told me that his theory for like how we should be advancing when it comes to medical technologies and new innovations is as quickly as possible when the goal is to save life. Not when it's just for fun. Not when it's just, let's see what we can accomplish. But when the possibility is saving life, we should advance as quickly as possible, but with those guardrails of ensuring that it's safe, that we're not just crashing, we're not just driving off a cliff, right? That will not do anyone any good. So this, I think, this is exactly this idea of Nachshon. We need Nachshons to help move society forward. We need a Nachshon to jump into the Yam Suf. We got to do it. That was to save our lives, to save Klal Yisrael. That was to receive the Torah. We had to jump in. Go for it. But there's also an inherent risk in that endeavor, right? That it leads to the Korachs, right? Being too risky, too embracing of risks, too much wanting to change and risk and do anything, whatever new idea comes up, embrace it. That's too much. That leads to Korachs. That can undermine the whole society. And so just as much as we need innovators, we need to do so with extreme caution, or else it will undermine its own goals. And we see that from the great example of Nachshon, the Kadosh Elyon, the holy, holy man who saved Klal Yisrael and got us out of Egypt, but also was too willing, maybe a little bit too energetic about embracing the ideas of Korach. And so from his example of this very holy, holy leader, we should learn that there is a time, of course, to move forward. We can't be afraid to embrace innovation, to embrace new things, to embrace life-saving technologies. But we have to do so, of course, with caution, with precautions, and enable, of course, our wisdom to catch up with our capabilities and trust the great leaders that we have, the Moshe Rabbeinus of our generation, that will lead us to the promised land, so to speak, and enable us to be able to embrace new technologies to save lives, but to do so with caution and the proper balance of precautions.